Hello and welcome to Radio EduTalk. This is David Noble in Dalgety Bay, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show this evening Richard Holm of University of Dundee. Welcome to Radio EduTalk, Richard.
Hi, David. It's good to be on your show tonight.
And just before we start tonight's show, I'll just say that you can get in touch in two ways. You can get in touch via Twitter using the hashtag EduTalk, or you can email us at edutalker, that's EduTalkr, at hotmail.co.uk. So just to start off with, Richard, could you give us a brief background to your career in education?
Yeah, of course. Before I actually got into education, I actually worked in the food industry for a short while, food manufacturing, and that was the degree that I'd studied when I was an undergraduate. And I spent a few years working in that sector, and I really enjoyed working with it's a living and training function, training facility, supporting staff, developing staff, which I think became relevant to me a little bit later in my career. And after a few years of doing that, I was volunteered as a school governor, and I'd always been interested in education and schooling in particular, and decided I would go back actually and do the teacher training course. So I actually trained as a primary school teacher, and then I worked in primary schools in the northeast of England for a few years, and then undertook master's study, and I studied towards my MEd. And then when I completed that, the tutor I'd been working with had suggested that perhaps I could look at maybe getting a bit more involved in research. And it was at that point that I made the transfer into teacher education. And I'd always worked with students when they were on placements in my school, and I'd enjoyed the research side of things when I was doing my MEd, so it was sort of a natural progression. So what I do now is I work at the University of Dundee in the initial teacher education department, and I work at undergraduate level, a bit of postgraduate level as well, and also I work on our master's program, and I'm currently working towards my doctorate as well part time while I work in the education department at Dundee. So,
but in terms of your own CPD when you were a primary school teacher, can you give us a flavour of what that kind of looked like, and how you kind of felt about the quality or the mode of delivery of the CPD, and whether you saw any issues with it?
Yeah, of course. It was something that I think I'd always enjoyed learning informally. But when I got into teaching in school, what I found was you'd be called in on every Tuesday, maybe it would be, and you'd be sort of sat down in a classroom, a primary classroom, and somebody would come and talk to you, and you could perhaps almost say it was a sort of 4:45 clock watch. So as soon as it got to 4:45, people were sort of itching to get out of their chairs, and it was very much a top down form of professional development. And then there was one Friday afternoon I was fortunate to have my PPA time, it's called, or the Macrone time as it's called, which is your sort of planning time. And I'd seen that there was some training going on. There was an opportunity to engage in something that would be off site. And I asked the head if I could go along to that, and she said, yeah, of course you could. So I went along, and it was just doing something like stop animation. It was quite a basic CPD session. But I really, really enjoyed it and came back and was completely sort of energized from it. And then as my sort of career went over the next few years, I engaged in more and more examples like this, where I went looking for the opportunities for CPD. And I think that was the sort of the key moment for me, where I realized that when you had a bit of ownership over it, or maybe you had a bit of control, and there's a chance for you to engage in these things for yourself, then you've got an awful lot out of it. Certainly I did. And that sort of led me on when I was working at Dundee at the university to sort of be delivering my own CPD and thinking more about how we could organise things for our students or for teachers that was very much, they had the control over how they led that and how they got involved with that, and they perhaps managed it for themselves. And there's been some great examples recently, in fact, where some of our students have got involved with things like Teach Meets and Pedago, and in fact, our postgraduate students this year on the programme at Dundee asked if they could organise their own learning festival, and one of our recall days where they come back to university, they sort of took over that and took responsibility for it. So that was sort of my experiences and how I became interested in this idea of teacher-led or informal or DIY PD.
And actually, at this stage, you mentioned there about Pedago and Teach Me, and maybe for the benefit of some of our listeners, possibly from further afield than Scotland or the UK, can you just enlighten us as to what these two kind of movements or resources are?
Yeah, so the Teach Meet, I think it does date back to, and I think you were involved in this. It dates back to Scotland more than 10 years ago, and I came across it in the northeast of England, actually in Gateshead, and it was an event that anybody could access, anybody could go along to, and it was for primary, it was for secondary students as well, and I had an evening where I went along, and it was a really great experience for me. Pettigrew is a very similar sort of event, and there's quite a few of these been set up in Scotland recently. And rather than it being a teach meet where people go on and they hear from somebody talking to them about a particular topic, a particular area of expertise, the Pettigrew model is more about around a conversation, so more sort of almost a workshop model where people sort of get together and they chat about ideas and they share ideas. And we've got one coming up fairly soon in Tayside. Pettigrew Tayside are organising one at the University of Dundee. So I'm very keen to get along to that and see what people have been learning about and how they can pass on that expertise to each other.
Just going back a bit, Richard, you know, at the same time you were starting to examine kind of organised, formalised professional development and experiencing the likes of Pettigrew and Teach Me, as I understand it, you were also engaged in master's studies, so kind of perfect mix there for you to really start to get your teeth into the different forms of CPD that are out there or developing.
Yeah, I think I mentioned at the moment I'm researching, working towards my doctorate, and I'm looking at this idea of what I've loosely termed DIY PD. I've carried out an expert survey where I've asked various stakeholders, people who've been involved in things like Teach Meets or academics from that sort of background and from stakeholder organisations, what they think of this idea of sort of informal professional development. And although I've not completed the findings yet, it seems to be almost as if the label or the name that's given to it isn't really the crucial thing. It's the fact that the people involved have some sort of power over it. So the informal element can almost apply to things that have been formally coordinated, but the way, like a master's study or like some event, possibly this in a school even, maybe around a PLC or a TLC, but the teachers themselves have got this ownership over it and this responsibility for it almost, and that seems to be the key factor, certainly from the research I've carried out so far and you know, the sort of people I've spoken to about this.
So what's your actual research question then within the PhD, and what kind of areas is that branching onto?
The initial sort of question that I set out to investigate, which will sort of, by the time I get to the final product, will have changed a little bit, was looking at the push and pull of teacher professional development. So what I'm quite interested in is whether this sort of top-down model where the idea has been sort of passed on by somebody who's in a position of power or somebody in a sort of more hierarchical position to the teacher, to the end user, to the educator, is in contrast to something where somebody's actually pulling at that and they want to do this for their own benefit, from their own interests, for their own motivations, really. So that's the main crux of it. Is it a push or a pull impetus for the professional development?
And as I understand it, you're looking for maybe some people to get involved in certain ways. Is that right? And if so, you know, how can people get in touch with you and what you're looking for from them?
Yeah, well, it would be really great to hear people's views because the topic is around sort of informal or certainly teacher-led professional development. I've been I've been very fortunate to be able to access through social media and through a lot of the networks that are available through advances in technology, lots of people, experts, but also your day-to-day teachers who are engaged in this sort of thing. So if anybody wanted to contact me through Twitter, they could do that, and it's at Richard J. Holm, H-O-L-M-E. Or you could actually have a look for my WordPress blog, which is just Richard Holm. If you search for Richard Holm, all one word, in WordPress, you'll be able to find my blog there and contact me through that. It would be great to hear from people and hear their experiences as well.
Now, just kind of going to the literature for a moment, Richard, and there's lots of people who you've kind of mentioned on your blog, and we'll maybe come to that soon. But certainly from my own experience of reading the literature, and I very often talk about, top-down versus, bottom-up, and they talk about control versus autonomy, transformative versus transmissive CPD. From your experience and your research so far, is, you know, is that true to an extent, and B, is it helpful to think in those terms?
Yeah, from what I've sort of researched so far, there does seem to be an important element in this, and it is very much the perceptions of teachers and educators as to what works or what is valuable. But there does appear to be almost a greater desire or a higher value attached to something when there is the opportunity there for the teachers to sort of engage with this in a more transformative manner, and that might be through something like master study. But also this element of them having some sort of control over it. The alternative is absolutely, as you say, is this more transmissive model, you know, sort of this top-down model. I think, from the literature, there is a place for that, but it very much depends what the, you know, what the individual is trying to get out of it, and what the school, you know, and say maybe the management are looking for as well. So there's possibly a place for both in, you know, in the development of schools for the future and school development plans.
And who have been your influences? I mean, just as I say, from reading some of your writing on the blog, you know, you reference Ivan Illich from, you know, going back a few years now, and then right up to date. I've not been keeping up to speed in it in the last couple of years myself, but you also mention I think someone who's now finished a doctorate, Tim Jeffress. So can you give us a kind of flavour of what these people have said about you know, the type of learning and approaches to learning that we're now seeing within teacher CPD?
Well, yeah, I suspect people are probably quite familiar with, especially people who've got into teaching quite a while, will be familiar with Ivan Illich and his idea of de-schooling society. And his very much sort of theoretical approach, or his idea, was that schooling, particularly the sort of 5 to 12 age group, was almost sort of driving society. We'd almost got into this idea of you know, being almost acting like sort of school children and following on from some of those sort of rules and the way that we do things. And then, of course, the schooling ends up reflecting that. And it's interesting, in his book, De-Schooling Society, he makes some suggestions how we can challenge some of these things. And he suggests things that having written this in the 70s, that sound very much like professional learning communities. And he talks about the use of technology before we had the internet was available to everybody. So I found that quite interesting, looking at it from a historical perspective, but also some of the underlying theories. And you mentioned Tim Jeffries as well, who completed his, he's a secondary head or deputy head down in England, and he completed his doctoral study a couple of years ago at the University of Birmingham. And he, which you can find his work online if you look for it. And he was looking at how social media, and in particular Twitter, can be used to help school managers and help them develop. And he talked about things like democratization of learning, about the ability to build up connections and networks. And something I'm quite interested in as well, he introduces the idea of tensions and the way in which different people can debate ideas and can challenge each other, because that is one of the criticisms of social media in particular, is it can become a bit of an echo chamber and people just end up getting the same ideas repeated to each other. And Tim's research looks into that in some detail, and I think it's certainly worth it looking at, especially if someone was thinking about using social media themselves. And very recently, in fact, you know, also looking at social media, some of our students have got involved with this, and at the University of Dundee, and my colleague Derek Robertson has been sort of instrumental in encouraging the students to use blogging to share ideas and to sort of discuss things that they've been doing in the university. And they've been using the GLOW platform, the Intranet Scotland, to host these blogs. So I'd recommend people perhaps looking up some of those as well, and if they again do an internet search for EduShare blog posts, so EduShare, EduShare blog posts, you'll be able to see quite a lot of them, because most of our students have made those publicly available for people to have a look at. So,
And in what ways have the students been using the GLOW blogs?
So it was started off as part of an e-portfolio for them, so on our undergraduate programme to follow through, because previously what we'd been doing through the four-year degree was hosting one within the university's virtual learning environment, the Blackboard function, which we found wasn't working particularly well, and Derek Robertson did some work to get this set up and run through GLOW, and it has been pretty successful. And what we've actually found is, although we weren't using it for our postgraduate students, the one-year programme students, quite a few have now picked this up and are doing it themselves. And I've certainly found from blogging, and I write about all sorts of random things, you know, not just about my professional life, but also personal life as well. But the more you do it, the more you use it as a reflective tool. You find other people commenting and making suggestions to you. And I think the community and collaborative element is really important too as well. That really helps with that.
And you mentioned a few moments ago there, Richard, about the way that teachers are using Twitter. And I wonder to what extent you feel that it is being used as a professional development tool.
I personally find it, and I know it's not for everybody, and not everyone's particularly keen on it. And there are some criticisms. Again, I mentioned the echo chamber idea, and that people just repeat ideas, and equally. Possibly poor ideas or things that are inaccurate can get repeated, and with the sort of ideas of fake news now, and the President Trump, this is obviously something we've got to be wary of. But having said that, I think it is extremely helpful for making connections. And I tweet a few things myself, and at the University of Dundee, we have a hashtag which we encourage students to tag things with. So they'll hashtag UOD edu, so UOD EDU, and they can then search for those, and lecturers can tag academic papers, they can place references to blogs, and I don't think it's the fact that it's so much Twitter itself that's helping this. It's just the speed of accessibility and the fact it lets you search through things, and it's also helped me build up my professional networks an awful lot. Actually, at the moment, I'm away doing a little bit of work at Newcastle University, and that was set up through somebody that I'd met at a conference, but then we ended up communicating through Twitter, and we often and repost each other's comments and things and link to articles for each other, which you wouldn't have been able to do previously if you were relying on face-to-face contact. And Tim Jeffries talks about that if you go back, you know, several decades, that when people, especially in leadership roles, were looking for communities of support, you just couldn't do it. And if you're having to write to somebody or you're waiting to meet them at a particular meeting, you might only get that opportunity once in a while. So I think Twitter's certainly done that. And the other advantage that people talk about is that it's democratized professional development, professional learning. So it almost takes a sort of seniority in the hierarchy out. So you know, the various people that you can tag that are looking at, you know, that are looking at their own Twitter accounts, who'll repost, and you know, I've had replies from people like Mark Priestley, who's working at Stirling, who's quite well known in education, you know, and other people as well who'll respond to you or you can contact too. So I think it is a very, very useful tool for teachers. Yeah.
And it sounds that the research that you've embarked upon within the doctorate is, and with your blogging, is this may become at a time where, you know, as a teacher educator, you're also sort of challenging yourself and notions about what learning actually is in this stage in the 21st century. You know, and if that's the case, what impact is it having on the way that you work with student teachers?
I think it's changed me an awful lot, and I'm very fortunate that I'm following the the PhD route, it's the professional doctorate route, and the idea of that is that it does tie very closely in what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. And the fact that I suppose somewhat fortuitously picked professional learning, a lot of what I'm doing is learning alongside it, which is what you'd expect. So as I'm carrying out my research, I'm keeping a reflective diary, which is now up at something like 15,000 words, and I occasionally take parts of that and put that into my blog. But that in itself is feeding back into the formal research I'm carrying out. It's feeding into the teaching I do with the students. It feeds into the when I'm visiting students on placement and working with children if I happen to be in classrooms, and then I'm learning from them as well. And it's feeding back in again to the planning that I do, and it feeds back into to the research. So it's quite a nice little cycle the way that it all connects back together, and when I get to go to events like Teach Meets and events like Pedagogy, I'm conscious not too much to sort of push forward, because I'm conscious of this idea of the hierarchy and the fact that at university you've got a certain degree of seniority people might see compared to perhaps to everybody else. So I'm conscious of not pushing that too much and just take the opportunity to learn, and I'm always astonished at how much teachers engaging in this in these arenas, whether they've been teaching for, you know, 6 months and they're a teacher education student, or whether they're somebody that's been in, you know, post 20, 30 years, how much you can learn from them. So yeah, I just I do find it sort of quite exciting to learn, and this whole sort of journey I've been on has really given me that opportunity. So.
And if you don't mind me asking, Richard, with that you said about being a professional doctorate, and that's something that I'd looked into a while back when I was doing Moaned D, that I never finished, but and it seemed quite attractive to somebody like myself working full-time in a school. So can you say a wee bit about how the professional doctorate works and how it works for you, I suppose, like everybody else with a busy life?
Well, it works very much on the same lines as the part-time masters or part-time MEd, which quite a few people would be aware of, and I do teach on that program as well. And often teachers might be a bit wary of how much time would be required for that. But a bit like the MA or the MEd part-time, it's modular, so you can sort of work your way through it. The professional doctorate's also got the opportunity to get some recognition of prior learning. So depending on your situation, you might have perhaps done some work before that you could claim towards that. And then it's basically a process of working through, firstly, a literature review, and this is how it works at Dundee, where you do some reading and then writing around the particular topic of interest, and that sort of makes your justification for your research. And then you can work on the actual research study itself, and because it's modular, you can do a combination of either a single or double modules, and the way I'm doing it myself is I'm probably going to do the double modules worth of work on an expert survey, which is this is Delphi study method, where I've used several iterations of a survey to understand what people think about this idea of informal DIY PD, and then the final module I'm going to be using my reflective diary, which I've been running alongside the whole process. So it does feed in very much to what I'm doing. It also ticks the boxes, not that that's the reason for doing it, for things like my professional update, which as a GTCS registered teacher I need to keep up to date with, and also in my day-to-day job in the university we have a sort of performance management process which we have to keep updated every year, and all these things fit very, very nicely together. And of course, the most important bit is I can incorporate into my day-to-day work and my day-to-day teaching as well. So it's sort of moving me forward and making me, I think a better teacher and understanding, what I do on a deeper level.
No, I can imagine that the findings from your research are going to be of great interest to many EduTalk listeners. So I'm just wondering where we should be going for more information or to keep track. You'd maybe mention your blog and give us that address, and also whether you're actually going to be sort of publishing along the way, or whether we can have you on the show in a year or two when you finally publish your research itself.
No, absolutely. And now you've got this recorded. I'll have to stick to this, and I'll try and get things tied up by hopefully the end of this year, certainly the early 2018. Most definitely, I'll make sure that the final report is available somewhere, whether I can put that onto my blog. But if people do want to find my blog, it's a WordPress blog, and it's Richard Holme, so RichardHolme. WordPress. If you just did a search for that, and occasionally I put extracts up there and shorter pieces. There'll also be various other things that I've written about politics and possibly football from time to time. So you sort of wade through that to get to the educational stuff as well. And if people did want to get in contact, they can comment on that, or they can contact me through Twitter as well. It'd be great to hear from them. If they want to email me directly, my university email is r.j.holme@dundee.ac.uk. But again, you can find my details on the University of Dundee website too.
And just finally, Richard, if somebody's listening to you this evening and they're thinking about making an effort to experience some alternative or maybe just different types of professional development, and want to find out more about some of the kind of resources that you've mentioned, where would you direct people, whether it's in terms of literature or events or PLCs, or networks that are out there? Where should they go?
I mean, My first point of call would be to start talking to people. So get chatting away to your colleagues in the staff room, start talking, start asking around, and ask them about, do they know of any Teach Meet events that are coming up? Teach Meet themselves, it's a wiki-based website blog. It's really quite sort of straightforward. And what you can do is you can just sign up for any particular events that are coming up. You can just go along. You don't have to engage with it other than call it lurking and sort of hanging around. What you can also do is, as I mentioned, social media. You can use Twitter, but people use things like Pinterest as well, just to sort of see what's going on. The other thing that I would encourage people to do would be, if you see events like Pedagoos coming up, or even just organise your own little professional learning community or teacher learning community within your school or with contacts that you might have as well.
Thanks for that advice, Richard. And so we'll ring off just now, and the podcast will be available on the EduTalk website later on this evening. But thank you so much for taking time out. I know you're in a trip down south at the moment, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening. And I really appreciate you taking time out from your busy evening to join us on EduTalk. Best wishes with your studies, and I do hope that we can welcome you back on to Radio EduTalk in the future. So thanks again.
Okay, David, thank you so much for having me on the show as well. And I do hope we've encouraged a few people to get involved in professional learning, professional development for themselves. And it would be wonderful to come back on again maybe in a few months or a year or so, just to sort of update on how things have gone.